Today on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, United's CEO agrees his airline isn't doing a good job, and Hilton announces a new partnership with Uber.
Well, yesterday, Sports Leisure Vacation held their annual vacation preview day at the Red Lion Hotel Woodlake, and at 3:20, we bring you a behind-the-scenes look at one of Sacramento's oldest travel companies.
At 3:35, we talk to a Lyft driver about the pros and cons of being a ride-sharing driver. Our guests might be familiar to fans of KFBK.
And at 3:50, I'll be talking to Don Wildman about Season 9 of the Travel Channel's Mysteries of the Museum.
It's a spectacular Sunday afternoon. Wouldn't you agree, Tom? It is a spectacular Sunday afternoon.
You bet. Let's do the rest of the show outdoors.
Amen. You're listening to The Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
A traveling man, king of the road, riding on the city of New Orleans.
Kicks out on the Route 66.
That's entertainment.
Let's go on with the show.
Well, we are the Travel Guys, Tom and Mark, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. I'm a little disturbed, Andrew. I should have told him. I was taping the 49er game, so I didn't want to know anything.
You didn't want to know the score?
You know.
You're taping the 49er game? Are you a masochist or what?
My son-in-law was, he came on over and he went to the air show with my wife and daughter, and then he's missing. I mean, he's a huge 49er fan.
Uh-huh.
I am kind of a fair-weather 49er fan. They suck this year. And so does my enthusiasm, I guess, for the team, which is not fair. But at any rate, we were going to tape it and watch it, so...
Well, you only know the halftime score, so you're okay. Fact that they're within 4 points at halftime, I would suggest you is somewhat of a miracle.
Absolutely. I will leave the room at the bottom of the hour so I won't find out. And then, anyway, welcome to the show. We got a great show today. We had a fabulous day yesterday at Tour Preview Day there at the Red Lion Hotel, Woodlake, formerly Radisson, formerly... And if you go to travelguysradio.com, you'll get a chance to take a look at some pictures and other information, as we always do, post stuff about the Travel Guys Radio show there for you to kind of follow along with.
Peruse.
Yeah. And, you know, it is a sad day. Sad day, particularly for Mark, I don't know anyone who's a bigger Giants fan or a bigger baseball fan than Mark. I mean, he'll multitask, be watching the game and... doing all kinds of other tasks at the same time.
It always used to amaze my mother, who, by the way, celebrates her 81st birthday tomorrow. So happy birthday, Mom.
Yeah, happy birthday.
And it always amazed my mother when I was growing up how I could have the radio on the game and another game on TV. Of course, at those times, there was only one baseball game on TV every week on Saturday, and oftentimes it conflicted with a local broadcast, so then you would do two at once. And that was just training for what was to come, you know. Now you've got split screens and all of these great things going on.
For those that might not know what I was alluding to, today is the last day of the baseball season for the San Francisco Giants. And last time we looked, they were giving it up in the ninth.
They were up 3-0 going to the ninth, and I'm not even going to go into what happened after that.
Well, on with the travel guys. Let's get down to it here. I know people want to hear the travel news. Mark, you got some for us?
I've got something here. Let's see here. All right. We've been talking about selfie sticks in the last couple of weeks. Talk about something that fell out of favor in a hurry. A new study by travel dating website MissTravel.com shows just how far the selfie stick has fallen. A study asked more than 58,000 customers and frequent flyers to point out the biggest pet travel peeves of 2015. So 20% said hogging overhead compartments in airplanes. That's legit. Okay. Yeah, I understand that one. 17% said using an iPad to take photos was one of their pet peeves.
It's like holding up a giant TV.
Well, it is. But I mean, still, as long as it doesn't get in your way, I don't see why that would be an issue.
That's true. That's a little picky.
12% said overuse of social media in relation to travel. But the number one pet peeve, 42% of the people said that they were tired of selfie sticks. Wow. 42, more than twice as many who were PO'd about there not being enough room in the overhead on the airline, which is a fairly major issue with travelers.
You know, the selfie sticks is like this year. I mean, it's just like in the last
and it's like,
6 months.
And it's now like last year. Because now using a selfie stick is, you know, I mean, the way this is going, I suspect that people who are using those now, people who used to be polite and just wait for them to move, are now probably walking up right in front of them and just...
You know, what happened to the days of asking someone that was near you, if you would do you mind taking a picture
of
us?
Yeah. Well, and that still happens with phones often. As a tour director, I'm frequently in public places with a group of people, and people tend to look at me as the guy who might be willing to take their picture.
Sure.
And so, yeah, that still happens.
Now, they outlawed those at Disneyland.
At Disneyland and a number of other places have outlawed them. But, yes, the happiest place in the world is not, you can't use them there. And so it's, no. Selfie sticks are definitely something that you talk about things that are trending.
Yes.
That would be the opposite for selfie sticks. Okay, United's new CEO says, yes, we're not running a very good airline. He has... United took out full-page ads in major newspapers last week and said, Oscar Munoz, who is the new United CEO, said, we haven't lived up to your expectations, and that's going to change.
Well, the whole situation of the change in the CEO and so forth was because of misdirection and guidance. I mean, what else you going to do? I mean, the first thing you need to do as the new CEO is to step forward and address that.
But they didn't fire the old CEO because the airline was bad. They fired him because he did some things that got him into trouble with the law in New Jersey, or was about to get United in a lot of trouble with the law. Speaking of which... United, how did you know this was my next story here? United, remember they got in trouble. They put on a flight to get a guy in the New Jersey government home to Columbia, South Carolina once a week. And this is what cost the United CEO his job, Jeff Smizik. And so when they decided that they weren't getting, this guy got fired as part of the Bridgegate scandal with Governor Christie in New Jersey. And so when he got fired, United dropped the flight right away. And so apparently part of this deal with this gentleman, United agreed to send flights to Atlantic City for a year. And business was so bad after 8 months, they pulled out. Well, the deal was that if United didn't provide the service for a year, that the state had spent $104,000 in promotion and given them some perks and stuff, they had to give that money back if they didn't stay for the whole time. Turns out no one ever asked United for the money back because the guy who was running it had his own personal flight down to South Carolina and back. So this whole United mess in New Jersey is getting kind of interesting in that there was obviously some backroom things going on here that may not affect most normal travelers, but nonetheless kind of point, I guess, to a bigger problem at United Airlines that there may not be enough adults in the room.
Do you think that people such as yourself who are, frequent flyer regulars of United, you just don't even bring it up anymore? embarrassed now?
As a United...
Well, what can you do?
You can't do anything. And the other thing is that if you think the grass is greener on the other side of the hill over at Delta or American, that may or may not be true.
Absolutely.
So I think the attitude of the United people for a while has been, well, we'll just stick it out and hope it gets better, except that it keeps getting a little bit... It gets progressively worse. And one of the reasons it gets worse is because United has taken away the ability of their employees to fix things. So gate agents and people in the terminal and people on the phone that you call would love to help you with things and know what the logical thing would be to do in your situation, whether it helps you or not, what makes sense. But they can't do it anymore because the machines won't let them do those things. So United has created a culture where their customers are getting screwed. And their employees can't do anything to stop it. And the employees, the frontline employees, are the people who have to sit there and listen to the customers bitch at them all day because of things that are out of their control. So it's a situation that's going down the drain fairly quickly. Well, so this man needs to step in and do something about it. Otherwise, he's not going to have an airline.
We'll travel guys will be watching.
We will be watching. Hilton has gone into partnership with Uber. And before we went on the air, you told me that Starwood had done the same thing.
Yep.
They're putting a thing on their... Hilton has put a thing on their app where you can set... ride reminders through the Hilton app and get notified on the day of travel to remind them when to request a ride and then to go right through to Uber and get your car. So
I think with Starwoods, if I'm not mistaken, they're giving you credits to use for Uber.
Wow.
Like a free Lyft, or should I say a free Uber?
Should I remind our people that we have a Lyft driver on with us, a mystery guest.
Mystery guest. You'll be surprised.
You'll be surprised at who this is, I think, who's going to join us at 3:35 and really has some very good things to say about ride sharing and stuff. So if you're either a rider, a driver, or you're thinking about getting involved in this, we've got a Lyft driver this week, and we're going to have an Uber driver on with us next week when we are live from John Holloway's new place over on Howe Avenue next week. All right. Lastly, Hyatt has a lawsuit filed against them over alleged unpaid wages and gratuities. They've been hit with a class action suit from former workers, and it has to do with the fact that in Pennsylvania, they say Hyatt Hotels did not pass on the full amount of the gratuity that they charged their customers, like banquets and stuff like that, where they're charging you 18, 20, 22% gratuity, and that a certain percentage of that is supposed to go on to the servers, and apparently it was not.
Oh, boy.
So, ouchie, ouchie, ouchie. Cruise lines, very quickly here, are raising their daily gratuity fees. Norwegian and Holland America have both raised theirs recently. You know, that's where they put a suggested gratuity on your bill, and then at the end of the bill, you can adjust it if you want to, up or down.
Right.
Now, the only way you will be able to adjust it is by requesting an adjustment by email. So, I don't think that's such a good policy. And quickly, that is the end of the travel news for today.
Okay, we've got a fun little segment coming up after the break. You're going to love this. It's all about one of Sacramento's oldest travel companies. I bet you can guess who that is. We'll be back.
On the road again.
Welcome to the Travel Guys. I'm Tom, he's Mark, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. We're broadcasting live today from the Red Lion Hotel, Woodlake. It is vacation preview day for Sports Leisure Vacations, and both you folks in the audience and those listening to the radio are going to get a chance to find out a little bit about the backside. Am I really saying this? The backside of Mark Hoffman?
Be careful what you say, yeah.
A little history and a little bit about Mark as a person that you may not know. So let's get started. Let's talk, first of all, about the company. Mark, tell our listeners what inspired you to start Sports Leisure Travel, as it was originally called, Sports Leisure Vacations, to begin with.
Like most major decisions in life, it happened completely by chance. Those of you who have lived here a long time remember a property tax bill that passed in 1978. It was called Proposition 13, but you might remember it by the names of the gentleman who put it forward, the Jarvis-Gann Property Tax Act. And I worked for a park district. The park districts lost a considerable amount of their funding, so that forced some of us who worked at park districts to look for other jobs. I had run adult sports leagues, and I knew that there were people who wanted to go to ball games in San Francisco, maybe didn't want to have to fight the traffic and stuff, so I started running trips to ball games. My first customers did not look anything like the people in this room. They were mostly guys who played in the sports leagues.
Well, with that being said, you know, you could have chosen any type of a travel company. Why one that especially caters to mature travelers?
That was kind of an accident, too. One day, a driver on a baseball trip, sensing perhaps my frustration with the gathered multitudes on the bus, said, you know, I'll bet you the folks who go to the casinos in Reno and Tahoe would enjoy this kind of service, reserve seat and refreshments on the bus and stuff. So we tried it, and the first bus was a Friday night bus, June the 8th, 1979, 19 people to the Park Tahoe, a casino that doesn't exist anymore. That Friday bus lasted 2 weeks because it came back in the middle of the night. The following Tuesday, the 12th of June, 1979, we took a bus of folks to Harrah's Tahoe, and that was the day our company was really born, because that was the day I found people who appreciated good service, didn't barf on the bus, and showed up on time to come home. Which were all things I hadn't experienced to that point. So, no, I didn't really plan to be in the travel or the tour business or anything like that. It all kind of happened by accident. And then people started saying, you know, have you gone to Yosemite? How about taking a group to Hearst Castle or over to the coast? And within a few years, we were at the Grand Canyon and overseas and all sorts of things.
Well, you've been doing this for a number of years, and a lot of your travelers have traveled with you to a number of wonderful places. What do you personally love most about running this company, Sports Leisure Vacations?
I still get a big thrill. I was out scouting a mystery tour, and I can't tell people where it is because it's a mystery tour, about 6 weeks ago, and I found a new destination, a place I'd never been before, I'd never traveled, in these United States. And after 36 years, there aren't too many of those. But it's exciting to find something and know that you found something that's really neat and interesting and that you believe your travelers will find interesting too, and then to take them there and have that all, that circle kind of become complete. So finding new destinations and turning over a new rock is still exciting to me after all these years.
You're listening to The Travel Guys, Mark and Tom, here on KFBK. Mark, what is it that inspires you?
What inspires me? The people that travel with us, I would say, mostly. They are amazingly wonderful customers. They contribute their ideas, and over the years, we have become very much a family.
You've met a lot of people in the industry over the years. Who is it that you admire most within the travel industry?
That's pretty easy. I really admire Arthur Tauck, who started this industry about 90 years ago. In fact, there was an article in our newsletter about the Tauck story. And they have always had these exceptional products, and they conduct their business in an incredibly forthright manner with a lot of integrity. So I've always tried to emulate how they conduct themselves. And John and Mary Stachnik, who are the owners of Mayflower Tours from Chicago, which is a national touring company. Probably some of the people listening have traveled with them before. And John and Mary have been guides to me for over 30 years and just are really wonderful people. So those are probably some of the people that I most look up to and consider to be the people to emulate in the travel and tour industry.
Outside of the travel industry, who is it that you admire?
Oh, outside of the travel industry.
Well, of course, besides me. I mean. and the manager of the San Francisco Giants.
Yeah, well, I'm a huge baseball fan, so that's the best place to start right there. I really, Bill Gates is one of my heroes. I think that anybody who's an entrepreneur and is willing to step out and take a chance, not knowing what will happen at the end of the day, is a hero of sorts, because they're the people who keep this country great, I think, more than anybody.
The best moment of your life? Good question, Tom.
Okay. Does it have to do with travel?
Absolutely not.
Okay. The best moment of my life was coaching the Greer Panthers to the Mission Oaks football elementary school second level championship 100,000 years ago. Real quick story, a bunch of kids who didn't win a game all season, flag football league, we never won a game. In fact, we only scored one touchdown. We would have scored two, but the kids' flags fell off while he was running towards the goal line. We weren't that bad. We were just unlucky. And so the Park District, in their infinite wisdom, took all the good teams and put them in one bracket and took all the bad teams and put them in another bracket. That was a great opportunity for us because we were better than we had shown. And my kids won the bottom bracket. And the last game was at El Camino High School on Monday night under the lights, Monday night football. And in a miraculous ending that I'll tell you about sometime on the bus, my kids pulled off an amazing finish. And that was the day I realized that every kid in every sport, every team should lose at least one game every season, and every team should win at least one game every season, because it was important for those kids to have a chance to win, and it was a thrill to be there when they won. So that was the best moment of my life.
Okay, we're going to switch back to travel. Mark, how do you go about selecting destinations and trips for Sports Leisure Vacation?
These people tell us where they want to go. They write on their evaluations, and they bend my ear when I'm on the bus or at events like this. They talk to our staff. We listen to the people who travel with us, because that just seems to make sense.
But I do know that there are times when you can't be at the travel show because you're out doing something, but it's not traveling with a group. A little bit about that.
We do a lot of scouting for trips, and I go out and spend a lot of time on the road just checking out destinations and going to places. Listen, our trips cost a little bit more than most of our competitors, and so they need to be a little bit better. And one of the ways they get better is that we go out on the road and check these places out before our customers get there in almost every instance. And so we know exactly what we're getting into, and there are a lot fewer surprises. I think that most people who travel with Sports Leisure would agree with their friend's assessment that our trips cost a little more, but I hope that they would feel that they get more for what they for the money that they spend.
What are your goals for the future for Sports Leisure Vacations?
We just have to keep innovating. We were one of the first companies in the country to start taking smaller groups on tour. We were one of the first companies in the country to offer reserved seating years ago. We were one of the first to pick people up at their homes. Now major tour companies picks people up at their home now. So I feel like that our little company in Sacramento has had a little bit of influence on the rest of the industry. I've always said it, there's no problem when your competitors are copying your ideas. It's when they start thinking of good ideas of their own that you have a problem. So for now, we intend to be the one that keeps thinking of the good ideas.
Okay, one last question, and that is, you have a wonderful staff. How do you train these people? What is your method to make them as much fun and as good as they are? How does this happen?
I've always said that good tour directors are born, not made. You have to have a knack for being a people person and being a decision maker and being able to make an independent decision on your own that sometimes isn't right and incur the wrath of 30 people because of it. There aren't a lot of places to learn to be a tour director. It's really something that you know. Our office staff and our road staff, I have right now the best team. I said this last year, but I have the same team, so I can say it again. I have the best team of people that any, not only travel company, but that any company could have. I have the best staff.
Mark and Tom, the travel guys here on KFBK. The news is coming up next, and we'll be back with more right here on the Travel Guys. Thanks for joining us.
If you ever plan to motor west, travel my way, take the highway, that's the best.
Travel Guys here on KFBK, Mark and Tom, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And as we promised, we're going to talk about Uber and Lyft. And we've got our special guest on the line, that somebody that our listeners that listen to KFBK for some time probably already know. He's hosted for Tom Sullivan, hosted for John McGinnis, kind of a regular around the building. I think I've known Spencer probably a minimum of 15 years. Spencer Hughes, a celebrity Lyft driver. Spencer, welcome to the Travel Guys.
Thank you. You're one of the few people that remembers me when I had a little bit of hair left. But, we go way back. So.
Yeah. By the
you
way,
remember me about 50 pounds ago, and I had hair.
Oh, hey, well, you know that resembles me. And by the way, I mean, since you're a Lyft driver and a celebrity, certainly, well, both in Sacramento and in San Francisco, you have your name there on the in the automobile, and you can charge more because they're riding with a celebrity.
I wish people knew me. Nobody knows me.
How long have you been part-timing for, you say you just drive for Lyft?
Yes, just for Lyft, almost 2 years now. I started right around, I want to say November 1st. I missed the Halloween crowd, thank God, because that would have been trial by fire. Halloween's a pretty tough crowd to debut ride-sharing on. It was really crazy busy on Halloween.
That goes to a place that we wanted to talk to you a little bit about, Spencer, is you read some reports where people say, yeah, well, in order to make good money on these ride-sharing services, you need to be out there when the fares are increased. And when you do that, you're going to be driving at 2:30 in the morning when the drunks are puking in your car and stuff like that. What are the up and the downsides of being a driver for a ride-sharing company?
I love the flexibility, and that's why I think the whole Uber lawsuit is going to end up. People are going to shoot themselves in the foot, the ones that want to be considered employees. I like the fact that I'm not an employee. I like being a 1099 because I can drive 20 minutes a week. I can drive 13 hours a day, but I love the flexibility of it. I think the best thing about this whole sharing economy is that it's great for people who want to do it full time, and I know a lot of people that do, and it's great for there's teachers who are Uber and Lyft drivers. I've heard of firefighters that do it. I've heard of, I mean, just every, you know, every occupation under the sun.
So what's the downside
to pay for vacation? A lot of people think that is the downside as well. The flip side is that there are no benefits. There is no, you know, if I hurt my back while driving, you know, there's no workers' comp. And I don't necessarily see that as a negative. I think I fully know those risks as a 1099, but I think to people at large, that's seen as a large negative. I've driven... I know this only, I haven't kept count, I promise, but every week we get an email and it tabulates how many rides you've given. So part-time, I've given, I think going into this weekend, about 3,400 rides, which, you know, for just weekends, that's quite a bit. There's some drivers that do it full-time that are already, you know, 50,000 plus rides and stuff. but I only had one negative experience with somebody who was really, really drunk. It was like 3:30 in the morning. And the beauty of ride-sharing is we know who these people are. It's not like the risk of a cab driver where it could be any random.
Yeah,
it could be a random serial killer or some weirdo or, you know, everybody has their credit cards on file. We know, or the company knows anyway, first and last name. They know your Facebook account. They know, you know, all this stuff. So there's some accountability. And there's a rating system, too, which is nice. So it tends to keep people behaved on both sides. It keeps drivers behaved. And the passengers don't want to lose their account. You know, if they love Lyft and they love Uber and they know it's in their best interest to put on a good face and be polite. And, you know, everyone will get a five-star rating at the end.
Spencer, dollar-wise, you know, there's been a lot of discrepancy in regards to what people can make. Let's talk a little bit about that. There's a lot of expense that goes into operating your own car, you know, and here again, probably quite a difference in what you can make from one city to the other. Tell us a little bit about your feelings on that.
You bet. Well, I spend my time between San Francisco and Sacramento. I live outside of Sacramento. And I thought when Lyft moved to Sacramento, I'm like, bingo. You know, I don't have to drive 4 hours round trip to do this. I could just do it locally. And I tried it in the beginning. It was completely a ghost town. Nobody was using it. Nobody knew what Lyft was. Uber is a little bit more successful because they're just, I mean, they're worldwide. Everyone knows Uber. But Lyft, not so much up here yet. It's growing. But I'll give you an idea. Last Friday night, we had a friend's memorial on Saturday, unfortunately. So I couldn't spend the weekend lifting in the city because we had that commitment. So I tried Friday night in Sacramento, and I went down to Midtown, downtown, you know, kind of all the hot spots. And I got 2 calls in 2 hours, and I finally went home. So that was a total, I'm embarrassed to admit, it was a total of $10 over the span of 2 hours. I'll go to San Francisco, and I'll just be honest with you with the numbers. I do 13-hour days, and I can walk away after the commission's taken out. They take 20%. I could walk away with $350 to $400. And that comes out to, you know, roughly $28, $30, $32 an hour.
Spencer, any reason that you chose Lyft over Uber? Have you ever considered driving for the other company? Or, and I know there are a couple of others out ride-sharing companies also out there.
Right. You know, I'm going to sound kind of old-fashioned here, but I looked into both companies. I actually got into Lyft through a friend who was also in broadcasting. She was using it just for a little extra money on the weekends and found she was actually making more from that than from radio. And I just liked it. I fell in love with the ethics of the company. The people who started it are these young guys, you know, these startup guys who actually both of them drive once in a while for Lyft, which I thought was amazing. I really liked that about them, that like New Year's Eve, which is a really dangerous night to be on the road. John Zimmer, who's the CEO, he'll get in his car and put the pink mustache on and he'll drive around for several hours. And I think that's really cool. I just like that. It seems that their ethics and morals are more aligned with mine. I'm not here to badmouth Uber, but they have a lot of kind of shenanigans going on. They just missed, it's in the news today. They missed a deadline again to present papers to the state of California. And they're just, it seems like they're sidestepping a lot of things and they don't bet
it seems like they prefer to ask for forgiveness rather than permission.
Exactly.
That's kind of been their approach all along. And in some cases, that's probably the right decision. But in some cases, it certainly is aggravating a large number of people. Spencer, before we let you go, if someone was out there and they were thinking about getting into ride sharing, what wisdom could you give them from a driver's standpoint?
One of the downsides that's coming to me now is just people, they forget that they're driving their own personal car. You know, and it costs money from fuel. You know, luckily gas is cheap right now, but it isn't always the case. You know, it'll creep back up eventually. But they have to consider when they're making 30, 35 bucks an hour on a good night that, you know, their gas, the wear and tear, the tires, you know. On the good side, just have a good personality. And we get tipped, by the way, at least Lyft. Uber's app doesn't allow for tipping for whatever reason. But I'm personable. I try to be bubbly and friendly. I talk to people, and they really appreciate that. And that's also something that you can add. You know, I add 25, 30 bucks a day just on tips, you know, just because I open the doors for people. I offer snacks. I offer croissants. So just kind of have fun with it and know that there is a cost to it. You know, there is upkeep of your vehicle, but it's a great flexible job for people that are either out of work or are trying to add, you know, a second job or even trying to do it full time.
One last question, Spencer, from a writer's standpoint. Now, I've never driven for a ride sharing company, but I occasionally will summon an Uber or a Lyft. From a passenger standpoint, can you give any
Any tips or any wisdoms from being a driver?
Yeah, just, you know, be on best behavior. I'm always surprised how people are just kind of, they take for granted that they're in somebody else's, you know, car. And I have a good time with people, but sometimes people forget this is my family car and, you know, my kids ride in here. And, you know, some people, you know, just drop garbage or just kind of, you know, I give free snacks to people, and it's not nice when I clean the car to find, like, you know, wrappers thrown under the seat and just things like that. I mean, just back respectfully. Most people do. You know, 90% of the people I pick up are very, very, very nice, respectful people. But just remember you're in someone's car and just kind of be personable, and usually the driver will reciprocate.
Great advice.
Absolutely. Spencer Hughes, our guest on The Travel Guy. Spencer, thanks for giving us sharing a little bit about ride sharing today. We appreciate it much.
One last
time. Thank you very much.
We'll give you a chance to give yourself a plug as to where they can hear you on the radio during the week.
I appreciate it. They can go to SpencerHughes.net, which is the best place because I kind of bounce all over the place. But if they go to SpencerHughes.net, N-E-T, they can find where I am at any given time.
All right. There you go. We are the Travel Guys here on KFBK, trying to make you a smarter traveler, even with ride sharing.
Yeah. How about that? Spencer Hughes. That's a blast from the KFBK past.
Well, yes and no. You know, Spencer did do a regular shift some time ago, but he finds his way onto the air, filling in for our talk shows on kind of a regular basis. A really, really fun and interesting guy.
Well, that was a great interview because a lot of good information there about, at least from the Lyft side of the spectrum. And next week we will have somebody from the Uber side of the spectrum.
All right, coming up right after our short 3-minute break here, we're going to visit with Don Wildman. He's the host of Mysteries of the Museum, not to mention several other mystery type shows on the Travel Channel. A very, very interesting program, interesting guy. That's next on the Travel Guys. Tom and Mark, the Travel Guys here, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations, and we're fortunate enough again to have a fabulous host from one of the great Travel Channel shows, maybe one that you've seen since it's been around for a while, Mysteries at the Museum. Our special guest, Don Wildman. Now, if you haven't seen the show, Don is, he digs into the world's greatest institutions to unearth some extraordinary relics that reveal some incredible secrets from the past, and then he examines these extraordinary tales of intrigue and adventure and wonder through some great compelling interviews, rare archival footage, and some amazing recreations. Don, welcome back to the show, and welcome to season 9 for you with Mysteries at the Museum.
Thank you very much for that comprehensive intro. You've done the job already.
Well, not really. I got a lot of questions I think people are going to be interested in that I don't have the answers to. First of all, I know that we just had the premiere of season 9. Tell us a little bit about what people can expect this particular season.
Every show, what I like about the show mostly is that there's a sampling of a wide range of content, you know, and from all different eras of history. And so each story is about a different object or thing, which is the tip of an iceberg that is the story we tell. And it's always a human story that we reenact through both dramatic reenactment and archival footage and documentary stuff and me narrate. Each one of those objects comprises the show. There's 6 of them. That's what's cool about the show is that you're not too far in, but you're far enough in to learn something, and then you're on to the next story after that. This season is more of the same. It just gets better because the research team that we have, I'm standing in a editing booth in New York right now. There's a lot of people involved in the show because there's other shows like it, Mysteries at the Monument, Greatest Mysteries. It's become a whole franchise for Travel Channel because it's very successful. And so we're all looking for these stories that are represented by these objects, trying to find that unlikely hook that grabs people's interest and frankly gets you back after the commercial. You know, it's that kind of thing in TV.
Don, I have to ask you, in all the different episodes that you have done over the last 9 seasons, what have you unearthed that you found most surprising?
You know, I'm a big American history fan. I mean, I really like connecting the dots on how this country became what it is. So when I get back to like the early 1900s, that somehow gets my juices going. You know, I like I'm from the industrial Northeast. I'm from Philadelphia originally. And so whenever we did a story about, you know, Buffalo or Rochester or these great industrial centers of the 1800s and 1900s, I'm home. And so it builds the world before I came along, which was the early 60s. And I suddenly have a deeper picture of what happened. And this country is amazing in its achievements in both industry and science and all sorts of other things as well. But those inventions that represent the past, were those achievements really are exciting to me. That part of the country, for example, you have the Tesla story, the Tesla and Edison, and how they created electricity that then powered the world. You know, these incredible things that these are truly, you know, yesterday in terms of the great history of the world. Yet 500 years from now, 1,000 years from now, they will talk about those moments as tipping points of history. So that's exciting to wake people up to the world that really we're still in developing around us. And it really wasn't that long ago that alternating current was invented and created.
Our special guest here on the Travel Guys, Don Wildman, host of Mysteries at the Museum. Don, you're in museums. Museums have amazingly expensive and rare artifacts. How do the curators deal with you?
Very good question. I'm going to talk about something that's not Mysteries at the Museum, but I did on a show called Tifley Cities years ago. We went to, or no, this is a special on Pompeii, which actually you can watch on Netflix, interestingly. The Pompeii show took me to the Naples Museum. And the great thing about that show was that I was examining the artifacts that were found on these skeletons, essentially, that were excavated around Pompeii. And I had the great privilege of going into the archival room of the Naples Museum and pulling out the jewelry that was on these bodies when they found them. And they would identify them as like the Green Lady because she had a copper necklace on and that green kind of went throughout her bones and so forth. But all those jewels were found and all that jewelry. So I picked up one ring and I was talking on camera. And when you're a host on TV, mm-hmm. you got a lot of distractions. You're thinking about, you know, what am I saying? How do I hold this thing? Where's the light? Where's the camera? All that's on your mind, and that's what you're doing. That's why you're a professional, supposedly. But you don't drop the ring.
Oh, no.
And that's what I did. And so it just slipped out of my hand, and there was this horrible moment where, because you're doing a TV show, nobody can get in front of the camera. So this 2,000-year-old object goes bang, 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 all the way across the floor of the museum floor, and I was mortified.
Oh, my gosh. That's what that's why I asked that question. I knew there
had been. Those are the moments that you just go, you blanch.
Yeah.
But it happens.
Well, you know, you probably got spread around that Don drops things, and they still invited you back, so it must not have been too awfully bad.
I guess. Yeah.
My co-host is a big fan of the Ford Museum, thinks it's one of the greatest museums of all time, and I know you you have an episode there. What's it about?
They have Reagan's limousine. You know, they have a number of those things. They also talk about the assembly line that Ford, you know, created, the whole situation there with reinventing industry. And they cover the whole gamut of other things. We've done a number of stories from the Ford. That is like, you know, one of the top museums in the world and indicative of what the great museums of this country have done in terms of sort of umbrellaing more than you think they would be. I mean, Henry Ford Museum, you would think was about automobiles, and of course it is, but it's really about American industry. That's a story about the rubber plantation that he created down in Brazil, which was an extraordinary thing when American industry was really reaching out to try to find new supplies of things in order to lower prices and sort of get a monopoly on these products. He built his own town down in Brazil in the Amazon. So it was an interesting experiment that didn't go so well.
Well, I'll tell you, just an awesome series, one not to miss. Our guest has been Don Wildman, history explorer, museum enthusiast, and the series Mysteries at the Museum and Monumental Mysteries. Don, thanks so much for spending some time with us, okay? And good luck with the show.
Thank you so much.
We are the Travel Guys, always hooked to the Travel Channel. Alan Rummelfinger with Daybreak Productions.
Rummelfinger?
Which means nothing to anybody.
No, but that's a great name, though.
We've been communicating and providing me with guests for the Travel Channel like peanuts. I mean, just so many great I feel like I'm almost part of the Travel Channel. Thank you very much, Alan.
All right, let's see here. What do we got, odds and ends here as we come towards the close of the program on Rob on the Road, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations on Monday night, Discovering the Delta. Join Rob to see why so many Northern Californians escape the hustle and bustle of city life to find peace and serenity in one of the largest estuaries on the West Coast. Hit the water to find fun, fishing, bird watching, boating, great dining, and history on the California Delta. That's Rob on the Road tomorrow night at 7:30 on KVIE. Do you ever blot a napkin on the top of your pizza?
I have been known. There are certain pizza places that I really like their pizza, and one of the reasons is because it's really greasy.
Uh-huh. Well,
and I have been known to say, you know what, maybe if I could just take a little of that off.
Well, if you're one of the people who does that, I happen to be one, and I get grief from my friends about it from time to time. But I saw a thing here. It says, by dabbing a napkin on a 14-inch Domino's personal pizza, you cut 40 calories and 4.5 grams of fat.
Oh, my gosh. Look
so
at that.
Take that, you non napkin dabbers and all of that kind of stuff.
Tomorrow is Monday, and you just had preview day yesterday right across the street here, and everybody's going to be taking that catalog that's got all those trips, and you told them, I heard you.
Uh-huh.
You said, call Monday, and we'll sign you up.
Tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, the phones will be all jammed up, I hope, at Sports Leisure Vacations, and hopefully nobody will be able to get through with ease until about 9:15 or 9:30.
I won't call you.
And so if you're calling in the morning, why, be patient. We have all hands on deck and as many phone lines, and we take care of people as fast as we can. I need to tell folks that our Sports Leisure Travel winner for this week, $200 travel card, because we had no winner last week, is Maureen Dranker, D-R-A-N-K-E-R, Maureen Dranker, who was at Preview Day yesterday. So if she's listening to the radio, she has won a $200 travel card from Sports Leisure Vacations. And if she's not, or one of her friends doesn't tell her, it'll be $300 next week.
Live from Holloway Travel, just around the corner on Howe Avenue at their brand new location next Sunday on the Travel Guys.
At 3 o'clock, come by and say hello to us. We'll be there from 3 to 4 live.
Have a great week. See you next time.